I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Dirt and Sprague on Football Friday on 1080 The Fan.
The autumn wind is a pirate, blustering in from sea. With a rollicking song, he sweeps along, swaggering boisterously.
This is a Football Friday edition of Dirt and Sprague.
Brought to you by the Radio.com app. Download the app, make the Fan your favorite station, and enable push notifications for the latest on the Ducks, Beavers, Blazers, and your favorite shows.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Hour two on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan. Dirt and Sprague back with you. Talked a lot of Pac-12 in hour one. We stick with football here in hour two with our favorite Brady Henderson covering the Seahawks for ESPN on Twitter, at Brady Henderson. Catch the game this weekend here on 1080 The Fan. Cowboys in Seattle to take on the red-hot Russell Wilson-led Seahawks. Brady, thanks for hopping on a Football Friday, my man. I want to start with defense because it's been made abundantly clear by every single person covering the NFL and in sports. The Seahawks don't have a pass rush. Their best pass rusher is Jamal Adams. So let me ask you this. What did they see on their roster that they didn't feel like that was a level of concern or a need for their team to maybe be more aggressive with a guy like Jadeveon Clowney or someone else? I knew Bruce Irvin suffers the ACL injury, but what did they see on their roster to feel okay about that?
Good question. I've been trying to figure that out. I honestly thought, and they thought that they would have a better pass rush than last season, and I thought that they would too. I had serious questions about whether or not it was going to be, you know, one of the best in the NFL, but I thought it would be better just because they've got, you know, a handful of, complementary pieces. What's missing is, you know, that Jadeveon Clowney type guy who's the obvious, you know, Pro Bowl primary threat that you see every other team in the division have. Aaron Donald, Chandler Jones, Nick Bosa, at least before he went down. They didn't have that guy. They thought they had enough, and part of that was, you know, they believed in their young guys more so than you and me and everybody else did, and they also believed in their ability to scheme their way to more pressure than they got last year. And I think that was part of the issue last year, is that they didn't feel like, you know, maybe they did enough just schematically to get those guys in good position. And Pete Carroll said that again Sunday night after the Patriots game when they had one sack of Cam Newton and only five official hits. That, you know, there was an acknowledgement from him that the coaching staff could do a better job of putting those guys in better position. And that's definitely going to have to be the case more so now that Bruce Irvin is gone. So that, and I think a steady diet of Jamal Adams, who, like you said, he's been their best pass rusher. And part of that, you know, they did make a pretty serious run at Clowney. I think, you know, they offered him, my understanding, was $15 million per year. So they did go after him, but there was a limit to how far they were going to go, and his desires exceeded that limit.
Yeah. What are we expecting from Jordan Brooks this weekend? They kind of highlighted him on the telecast last weekend that he's been turning some heads. Maybe he's a guy that can give you a little boost on the edge, and obviously the Irvin injury, so we're expecting him to play more. Is that something that could help in the pass rush, is getting that first rounder going?
Yeah, I don't know how much they're going to use him in that role. Maybe a little bit in terms of a blitzer, but, you know, they've got plenty. They've got Bobby Wagner and J.J. Wright who can do that, and Jamal Adams, like we said. So he is going to be starting, and Pete Carroll played it kind of coy about which of those linebacker spots he'd be starting at. Logically, I think what they would do is put him at the weak side spot and then move K.J. Wright over to the strong side, which is where Bruce Irvin played on early downs. They like Brooks more on the weak side, and really, you know, the way I see it is why would you burden a guy in his first NFL start with only 15 snaps under his belt? Why would you then, you know, add more of a burden to his plate by playing him out of his most comfortable position? So, you know, Wright has played way more on the weak side over his career, but he has played on the strong side a little bit, and he's a veteran, so he's going to be more equipped to handle that.
Yeah.
I think the fact that you haven't seen Brooks as much as a lot of people thought this season was, I think it's a big part of that is because KJ Wright came back from that shoulder injury a lot faster than they thought he would. So Wright ended up starting those first two games, and they only kind of mixed in Brooks sparingly, but now you're going to see a lot of him for the rest of the season.
Brady Henderson is our guest here, covers the Seahawks for ESPN on Twitter, at Brady Henderson. Big one here. You catch it on The Fan, the Hawks hosting the Dallas Cowboys. On the Oregon Sports Lottery app right now, they are 6-point favorites for you degenerates out there that might be interested in betting on this game. Look, I could ask you a generic, hey, how about Russell Wilson, huh? And you could tell me, yeah, he's really lighting the NFL on fire. We all know that. Let me ask you about the guy calling the plays, because what Seahawks fan loves to do is when things don't go well, it's the offensive coordinator's fault. They're bums. They want to run too much. They've let Russ cook, right? Everybody was clamoring for that going into the year. He's got 9 touchdowns in 2 weeks. What have you seen different from Brian Schottenheimer and company and what they're doing offensively to not only maybe put Russ in more passing situations, but just the dynamic of what their offense has been this year?
Yeah, there's a few differences. One of them is getting him going early in games. And we all know anybody who's watched the Seahawks over, you know, the past 10 seasons, even well before Brian Schottenheimer got there 2 years ago, is that they like to come out establishing the run. And really, a lot of times that ends up forcing them. They don't build a big lead, and they're playing from behind. And so they sort of, you know, turn to Wilson late in games to have him pull out wins. And it's kind of been, I don't want to say the opposite of that, but because they still had to throw it late, you know, in that last game. But they've really come out with, it seems like, a clear goal to get Russell Wilson going. That's been the case in those first two games. You know, they've come out throwing the ball. And I think another big difference, too, that I wonder if you're going to see this, you know, more so for the rest of the year is going for it more on fourth down. And we all talk about the let Russ cook conversation. It's easy to simplify it in terms of throwing the ball more or throwing the ball early in games. There's other ways that they can do that. I mean, let Russ cook is about basically leaning more on Wilson. And another way they can do that is trusting him more in fourth down situations, like you saw them do in the opener, fourth and 5 against Atlanta, which, I mean, that's not fourth and 1 or fourth and inches. That's fourth and 5. Like, right. That's not an easy conversion, and they trusted him to do that. And that's really not something that Pete Carroll has done a lot of. I want to say, I don't have the number in touch, but I think it was, like, near the bottom of a handful of teams in the league in terms of going for it on fourth down since Wilson's rookie season in 2012. So that's another area where I think you could see them be a little bit more aggressive in terms of throwing the ball earlier in games.
Yeah, and somebody who's helped a lot on that offense is DK Metcalf, who we know had a good rookie season last year. And then this last weekend, I mean, I don't know what you thought, but just watching him go against Stephon Gilmore, who arguably the best corner in the NFL, I mean, NFL Defensive Player of the Year last year, he torched him, it felt like, throughout, you know, periods of that game. Just what did you think of him having that moment on the big stage against arguably one of the best DBs in the NFL?
Yeah, it was. I mean, we all saw the plays that he made in that touchdown catch. And, you know, Gilmore was on him for most of that game. I think our stats department said it was 26 of the 30 routes that Metcalf ran. Gilmore was lined up across from him. And, you know, really the plays that he made stuck out. But really watching that game and watching the replays, I mean, he really went after Gilmore in run blocking, too. And those guys were, you know, kind of walking horns all night long. You saw it still over to the sideline in one play. So clearly DK Metcalf was not backing down by any means from the challenge of facing, you know, maybe the NFL's best cornerback, the reigning defensive player of the year. And, you know, the Seahawks, Brian Schottenheimer had an interesting comment yesterday saying that they felt like that was going to be the case because of the way that Metcalf kind of did the same thing in a Sunday night game last December when the Rams stuck Jalen Ramsey on him. And so you're seeing a young guy who has less, you know, barely over a season under his NFL, you know, under his belt, and he's already, you know, taking on challenges of facing the top cornerbacks in the NFL. And that's one reason, one of several reasons why Pete Carroll continues to talk about how evident it is to him that DK Metcalf wants to be great and is on this trajectory towards being great.
Yeah. Brady Henderson here. ESPN covers the Hawks. Does a great job, too, on Twitter, at Brady Henderson. Seahawks, Cowboys here on the home of the Seahawks. 1080 The Fan this weekend. big one for him. Look, they're 6-point favorites on the Oregon Lottery app. I think on other books, they're around 5 to 5.5, depending on where you're looking. So you get a little more Seahawk influence here in Oregon because you get some Hawk fans down here. I love the Cowboys here, and I think the Seahawks could win this game. I'd actually probably would pick them to win the game, but that just, it seems like with their defense, this is kind of one of those spots where Dak and company get it going offensively, and it's a back and forth. Is this a letdown spot to you when you look at what the Seahawks have been defensively and a lot of people kind of going all in on them after 2 weeks?
For sure, yeah. And, you know, they ask us to make our picks every week, and I made my pick. I think it was 34-28, Alex. Made that pick knowing, you know, not knowing exactly how bad their injury situation was. And with all the issues they already have, now it looks like Quentin Dunbar is going to be questionable. Their starting right quarterback, Benson Mayoa, is also questionable. It's going to be a game-time decision. And they're not going to be – they're not going to have Rasheem Green, who continues to be out with that next year. So, you know, the defensive line issues go well beyond Bruce Irvin's season-ending ACL tear. And now they've got some issues in their secondary. Now, fortunately for them, they do have a guy like Trey Flowers who played a lot of football for them and can step in. But we've just seen defense. We've seen offenses kind of, you know, pick apart this defense in the second half of these last two games. And granted, a big reason for that, I believe, is that the Seahawks were kind of playing softer because they had built a big lead. And, you know, they were kind of softening up knowing that the one thing that's really going to hurt them is you know, the quick strike. So they were kind of conceding things, but we saw defenses kind of move the ball pretty easily against them. And that was, you know, last week that was a Patriots offense that really does not have a lot of guys that you would consider explosive weapons. And the Cowboys do have those guys, you know, that receiver core of Amari Cooper, CeeDee Lamb, the first round pick, and Michael Gallup. So, yeah, it definitely, this game definitely has shootout potential just with the offensive firepower and the defensive issues on both sides. I could definitely see this, you know, looking like a Big 12 game.
Yeah, Brady, get you out of here on this one, man. Thank you for hopping on with us. Just what was your thoughts of being at a Seahawk game at CenturyLink? They have maybe the best home field advantage in the NFL. No fans, piped in noise. Was it weird for you in the press box to watch a game at the link with nobody in attendance and then piping in some crowd noise?
It was weird. Yeah, there were parts of it that were very weird. There were also parts of it that didn't seem as weird as you might think. And part of that, I think, is just because we had gone to the two mock games there and had seen the team playing there without fans. So, yeah, and we didn't even hear, or at least I didn't even hear in the press box, couldn't really hear the crowd noise. I thought that was going to be louder than it was, but I guess that just goes to show how loud it is normally when there's fans in there, because you can definitely hear that and feel that, but less so when the it's just the piped in crowd noise that I think was capped at 70 or 75 decibels or something like that. Oh. I'll tell you this too, I really like going in there and not having the battle traffic on the way into the stadium.
That had to be the best part of everything, right? There we go. Brady Henderson, ESPN, covers the Seahawks, does a good job on Twitter at Brady Henderson. Give him a follow. Big one this weekend. Looking forward to the matchup. Catch it here on The Fan. Brady, as always, man, thanks for hopping on with us and enjoy that game.
All right, thanks for having me. Take care.
All right, there we go. Good stuff from Brady Henderson, our go-to guy for Seahawks coverage for ESPN on Twitter, at Brady Henderson. Expects a shootout. I think a lot of people do.
Yeah, one of our people once chimed in and said, I'm already to the point where I don't want to hear the phrase, let Russ cook anymore.
Yeah,
I think we've
I
used that one enough. He's cooking. He's the MVP favorite for a reason, and he's going to continue to do so.
All right, we got a lot more to get to coming up. Don't forget, we'll Sprague the Line at 2:30 with Kevin Todd. So get your Sprague the Line sponsors in. But up next, a hodgepodge of football. I'll explain that next on The Fan.
This is a Football Friday edition of Dirt and Sprague.
Brought to you by the Radio.com app.
On 1080 The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Football Friday, Dirt and Sprague with you. Got my picks ready for Sprague the Line.
I got 5 games I'm trying to decide between.
Can I ask you this real quick?
Fire away.
I don't want to spend the whole segment here. I actually got something planned.
Okay.
It's 1:20.
Yes, it is.
I have my picks locked in.
Locked.
So is the line movement between now and 2:30, does that matter to you?
No, it's whenever you place the bet.
Okay. All right. Good to know.
Yeah, I'll allow that. Whatever your bet was placed at during the week, you get that line.
There's going to be one team whose line movement's going to change, not the way I want it to.
Between now and the time we do the segment?
Yeah, because there's some information that just came out about 10 minutes ago.
Oh, is it the New York Giants?
No.
Oh.
Mike, can we get, actually, you know what? If you could just keep this at a decent volume. Oh, my man.
Oh, yeah.
Mike Linton, by the way.
Oh, yeah. What's up, Mike?
He's leaving in 20 minutes.
Hi.
And then Buck will be in.
Oh, okay.
And then I'll come back in the last, like, 20 minutes.
I'm fairly certain our radio show today is setting the national radio record for producers in one day. Has any show ever had three producers in the same day?
Well, some shows have three producers at the same time.
Well, those are
bigger budgets.
Come on. Yeah. Budget, what's that?
It wouldn't be the first time we've dealt with that. Very quickly, I actually want to go through the college football schedule for the weekend.
Okay, I'm all for that.
I'm going to be paying attention now.
Are you really?
Yeah, there's some games this weekend I want to keep an eye on.
I will start paying attention because the Pac-12 is going to be playing.
Sure.
If the Pac-12 had not announced, I still would have been plugged out of this weekend, but I'm mildly intrigued.
Very quickly, before I get to the schedule, this is a fun note. Justin Herbert, who is getting the start for the Chargers, he's on a Zoom press conference. And he was asked what his parents thought of his performance. And this actually is funny, and it also kind of sucks. He said his mom missed the start, his first few snaps, because like everybody else, had no clue he was going to play.
Yeah, just didn't think he was going to be the starter.
So she was late to the start of the game, turned the TV on, and saw the long flowing hair, and was like, what? And she missed the first few plays of his first start in the NFL.
I don't know if it's happening here in Portland, but I did see somebody tweet earlier this week that they have changed the local TV game for the Eugene market.
Oh, God. They're Are we going to have every Charger game? I'm so tired of this crap.
That's the way it works, man. I don't watch it anyways. I watch the red zone, so it doesn't affect me in any way, shape, or form. But I did see in Eugene that the Chargers are the game.
Good man. You see every game, Dirk.
Me too.
I watch the red zone. Who doesn't watch the red zone?
Weirdos.
Well, some people don't watch red zone.
They're weird. You have issues.
You can't watch one
unless
game.
Unless it's your team. Unless you're a diehard fan of one team and you want to watch your team, you have the Sunday ticket, whatever. I get that. But if you're not that, you need to watch every game. It's too good to pass up.
I'm an OSU alum. That has nothing to do with this opinion. You're not going to believe it, but I promise.
Sure.
We have now had to endure.
Sure.
Lions broadcasts shoved down our throats. Good God.
Stop.
We had to go through 4 years of Titan games, which were the most boring games in the NFL. I'm rooting for the kid, and he played really well. I do not want to have every GD Charger game on TV because we're in Portland.
You watch the red zone.
I know.
So why are you complaining about it?
Because there's going to be some Sundays where there's a big AFC game and we don't get it because they're like, let's go to Chargers Raiders.
But you watch Red Zone.
But you watch the Red Zone.
But what I've said before is the big matchups, I like to watch from time to time when you get the big games. I'll watch a lot of those games.
Well, let's see what happens in Red Zone is that the big games are like only have two or three competing games. So you still get to see almost all of it.
You still get to see most of the games.
I dual screen it. I do red zone laptop, big game on the big screen when that happens. That's all I'm saying.
Well, it's either that or they're showing just the Seahawks every weekend.
Oh, God, yeah.
So,
you already see the Seahawks every weekend.
Yeah, it's
you're locked in.
Which you have, so.
I know, unfortunately. Okay, college football slate's pretty good this weekend.
By the way, it's like I walked into a years-long fight between the two of you as Dirk just keeps, like,
this
egging
you on.
This
got intense. I'm very angry with you right now.
Are we mad at each other?
I'm very angry with you right now.
Stop being a bitch.
I bet if this was Jake Luton, you wouldn't be complaining about it.
You're damn right.
Who's he the backup for?
Isn't he in Minshew. Jacksonville?
Oh, that's right.
I don't know if he's the backup.
I thought he won the backup job. You guys just did the backup quarterback game.
I don't think it was him.
This was
a big point of contention.
Rob had like six random-ass names I've never heard in my life game.
I think it's Jake Luton, but Rob refused to accept that it was Jake Luton. So we lost the quarterback game because he said it was Mike Glennon. But the Jags had cut Mike Glennon and then brought him back.
Yeah, I saw Mike Glennon last night warming up.
So I think Luton...
And I heard that segment. He screwed you guys because it came down to the very last pick for you guys to win it. It's Mike Glennon on ESPN's depth chart.
He's
back
on
the official Jags depth chart on their website, it was Jake Luton.
Okay.
Very confusing.
Well, didn't get too much football here, did we, for college? But let's get to it. Kansas State, Oklahoma, any interest? Spencer Rattler. The Rattler.
No, Oklahoma's favored by 28 points, and Kansas State lost to... inserts like Louisiana Raging Cajuns a couple of weeks ago.
Or Arkansas State.
Whoever the hell
remember.
It was. No.
Okay. I'll give you this game. I'm actually kind of excited for it. Florida Ole Miss, the debut of Fat Lane Kiffin.
Yeah, that does it for me. He is now fat, which is weird. Takes a while to adjust to. And Florida, a team that people think maybe is a dark horse in the SEC.
Well, they're fifth in the country. Can they be dark horse?
I think there's a prove it factor of can. I think they're always ranked high because it's Florida, whether they deserve it or not. I think there's a question of can you go from that to actually beating Georgia, LSU, Alabama, and the other teams that are on your schedule. So yeah, I'm interested in that one.
Yeah, I want to see what Lane Train's going to do with another go around in the SEC. Maybe this one will last longer than a year. Kentucky. I'm just going by these BS polls that really don't matter. Kentucky, I guess, is in the top 25.
They are.
Shocking. An SEC team gets the benefit of a doubt. It's a basketball school. They're taking on Auburn. Any interest?
No. But did you see, though, that they announced that the AP can officially vote the Big Ten and the Pac-12 back in on Sunday? So get ready for that controversy because you're going to have teams that are like 0-1 that fall out of the rankings, but teams that haven't played a game that jump into the top 25.
Louisville is 1-1 and somehow still in somebody's top 25 ranking.
It's because you don't have any Big Ten or Pac-12 teams ranked.
And they take on Pittsburgh and Pittsburgh.
No, I'm not interested in that one.
Me either. How about this? I know you'll be interested in this one.
Okay.
Mike Leach on the road.
Hey-o!
Against LSU in his debut. For Mississippi State.
I actually am really interested to watch LSU this year. They lost so much talent to the NFL. It's incredible what they're trying to replace, including Joe Brady, the guy who everybody thought was the mastermind behind Joe Burrow and what they did offensively. He's now with the Carolina Panthers. I don't know what the hell to make of Mississippi State. Mike Leach and the SEC will be a lot of fun, though. LSU replacing that amount of talent and still being ranked in the top 10 to me is very interesting. And I'm wondering if it's something that turns into a one-off type situation that everything came together for them in the right moment and they won a national championship, or if this is the start of something bigger that we've seen in other places that parlay a national championship into a run of dominance in the SEC. So I'm fascinated to watch LSU this year.
Yeah, put this on the schedule for me of a game I want to kind of check in and have on, because I want to see what Leach is going to do. The SEC is a conference he has long been wanting to coach in. There's been no doubt about that, starting in the Big 12, coming to the Pac-12.
Yeah, remember KJ Costello, too, is starting quarterback.
It has a really good read on him of why he wanted to go to Mississippi State. It's not necessarily him not liking David Sean Stanford. He had graduated Stanford. He had one more year of eligibility.
I'll go party in Stark Vegas.
No, he wants to be an NFL quarterback and be taken seriously. So he wants to go to another wrinkle of offense to show that he can be a pro style guy or an air raid, spread him out, sling it guy.
That's a smart way to think about things.
I'm rooting for him.
Yeah.
I'm rooting for KJ Costello, and I can't wait to see what LSU is with the amount of talent they lost, the coaching staff turnover. Yeah, and everything else. Texas versus Texas Tech do anything for you?
No, not much.
You don't like the Red Raiders, huh?
Texas is back, though, man. They're in the top 10. Look out. Here come the Longhorns.
Sure they are.
Are you guys actually really excited about these games? Or until the Pac-12 comes back, are you still kind of like, well,
the ones
it's a
I'm
weird,
saying I'm excited for,
year.
I am
yeah,
excited
no,
for. Yeah.
I want to see Lane and Ole Miss, and I do want to see Mike Leach at Mississippi State. But
I'm just
no,
having
not
a hard time personally getting myself jazzed up until the Pac-12 comes back.
Yeah, I've watched very little college football.
Because the year
this
has just been so disjointed and weird.
Can I tell you a secret? Don't tell anybody this.
Okay.
I haven't watched one snap of live college football yet.
Me neither.
And I'm not ashamed of it.
Me neither.
Do I feel like I should be watching college football. We're not going to discuss the Ragin' Cajuns out here. Maybe we'll go there on the ticker. But there's no conversation to be had.
Vice versa, too. I feel like I can argue. Now, this again, granted the red zone, I feel like I have watched every second of NFL football this year.
I haven't missed one snap.
I haven't missed any of it.
I've been addicted. In a way that I almost never have.
Injected into my veins.
I just know that when there's a normal college football season and the Pac-12's playing and everyone's playing, I'm sure you guys are the same way as I am. I will throw on a random game at 9 a.m. that I don't care about because it's college football Saturday.
Yeah. Sure.
And now I'm just kind of like, wait till the Pac-12 comes back and then I'll watch it.
You also haven't had any good games yet, which I think hurt. Usually early in the season, you have those marquee non-conference games. And to this point, you got nothing.
Well, here's it used to be a big rivalry. This is a big game in my childhood, and it's since become kind of irrelevant. Florida State, Miami, squaring off. Florida State's already 0-1. Norvell got the COVID. I don't know if he sat the first game or he's sitting this game. but Miami, Derek King off to a good start, 4 touchdowns. Yeah. They're 12th in the country.
Yeah, I think Miami is interesting because of the De'Ara King factor. He's an incredibly talented quarterback who, remember, last year said he wasn't going to transfer and then ended up transferring. Remember, he sat out, played three games for Houston. They got off to an 0-3 start. He sat out the rest of the year, said, I just want another year of eligibility. And then
they said he was coming back.
He said,
remember?
We're not going to transfer, Yeah. He ends up transferring. We all saw that coming a mile away. And I do get a sick level of enjoyment out of watching Florida State lose, and I think I always will. Is it valid to this point? Probably not, because they've already been spurned by Willie Taggart, but I do enjoy watching them lose. So, yes, I'm mildly interested in Miami, Florida State.
So there's kind of your rundown of college football for this weekend. Again, you may not watch every second of all these games, but there's a few out there that I think are worth following to see debuts of some of these coaches and what a team like LSU looks like, for example. Oklahoma State, by the way, who struggled, they are hosting West Virginia. All right. Nice rundown. Rob Mullins, by the way, asked on the conference call. He's doing one with Crystal Ball. We probably won't get to that today. He says Oregon will not be a school raising their hand to have a 9 a.m. start time. So there you go, Oregon fan. Although you might like it this year since you don't get to go to the game.
I think it changes it with not driving, but the coaches still don't want to get their team up for pregame festivities at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Not unless they're playing in Mountain Time.
Yep.
There you go. There's the college football slate for this week. And we're going to stick in college football. Dirt wants to jump back into the Pac-12. And we'll do that next. We got crunch time around the corner, and we'll spread the line at the bottom of the 2 o'clock hour. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Sprague, we're back with more Pac-12 talk on radio.com and 1080 The Fan.
This is a Football Friday edition of Dirt and Sprague.
Brought to you by the radio.com app.
On 1080 The Fan.
Hey, we'll spring the line coming up in an hour. Keep those fake sponsors rolling in. 503-250-1080.
Let's win some money, baby!
They said, love the show as always. You guys put a great program on every day. We got one, baby! We love you more, man. We
you better
love you
watch
more.
Out, Isaac and Suk. We've got one.
We got one. Okay, we'll get to the dumbest thing that's ever happened in sports coming up here in a few moments. Also play What the Line. Might be a new game we start on Fridays.
I commend Mike. I caught, they did their bets yesterday on their show.
Uh-huh.
Mike, like, actively chose to bet the Bear-Falcon game.
And you actively picked that game.
And I sat in my car and I said, ballsy play. I love the aggressiveness.
Bold move, Cotton.
That line and that game terrifies
me. Whose side are you on?
I'm on Atlanta. Because I'm not
like
betting
Atlanta
on Mitch
too.
Trubisky.
Yeah, I like Atlanta.
They're 2-0 against two bad defenses that he could throw all over. Atlanta's defense at least is okay.
They very well could be 0-2 as well. The exactly. Giants were driving with a chance to win that game. And,
the Lions had Swift
miracle.
Drop the touchdown catch.
They beat the Lions.
It wasn't so much you chose Atlanta. I'm kind of with you there. It was more of the games on the schedule. I circled that one and said, don't you touch that game.
No,
I don't trust it.
I was looking for games where I felt like teams weren't being looked at correctly early.
Value. You're looking for value.
Well, it wasn't like the line isn't super valuable. It's 3, right? I mean, that could be a push and you don't get anything for your bet. I was just looking for the teams that people are overlooking. Because I bet on the Saints, too. The Saints -3. They looked terrible last week. Drew Brees looks done. But going home, Packers have played 2 really easy teams. They're undefeated. Everyone's like, oh, Packers +3.
Hey, don't you sully the Vikings name like that.
Short week, old quarterback, no Michael Thomas.
Oh, poor Dirt.
Yeah, no, I felt that way last night about Thursday Night Football. Jacksonville has no business being favored by 3 points against anybody in the NFL.
Sure.
I don't care how they look in the first 2 weeks. Jacksonville should not be favored against anybody.
Under 49?
Under 49.
Hell yeah, brother.
That missed extra point. I was like, ooh, boy.
Let's get to this, though. Pac-12 is officially back. I want to throw these out to the listeners. By the way, Bill Connolly, front of the show.
Yeah.
He came out with a list of the most important players in the college football playoff chase.
Okay.
And he just released a top 5. The top 5 reads as following. JT Daniels or Dwan Mathis. That's the quarterback battle at Georgia. Bo Nix, number 2, because Auburn's top 10 team again. Rattler, who you mentioned, the quarterback at Oklahoma, is number 3. Miles Brennan, who is the new starter at LSU. Fun fact. At number 4. Number 5, though, on his list, Tyler Shuck or Anthony Brown.
Oh, Shuck hasn't won that yet.
I don't think they've officially named a starter.
Oh, okay.
So maybe they both end up playing this year, but I wanted to point that out.
How surprising would that be for you, for Oregon? And I know they're just getting underway with practices and whatnot here, but how surprising would that be? I think it would catch some people off guard a bit. We've just ran with the idea that it's Shuck now, and let's see what the younger quarterback can do. But you did have a transfer kid from Boston College who is kind of that dual threat, can really use his legs well. He has that experience at Boston College. Yeah. Maybe Anthony Brown kind of surprises people in camp, and somehow we're sitting here talking the first game, and it's Ducks quarterback Anthony Brown.
Could be. Speaking of camp, by the way, Tyson Alger, our buddy, tweeting out, I think this was on the Zoom, their first official day of practice will be Friday, October 9th. So that's when they're going to start. So probably strength training, I'm assuming, leading up to that. But
so he's not going to get 8 to 9 weeks, like he said.
Well, not 8 to 9 weeks of practice. I'm assuming they're back on campus doing things now. But point taken.
Yeah.
Let me ask this, though, and listeners, feel free to chime in on it. How do you want them to schedule the crossover game? Because this is going to be a hotly debated thing in the next week. We're going to get the schedule at some point next week, and I have seen both sides argued. Some people say Pac-12, make it easy, let the teams that are of the, you know, upper echelon opinion, Oregon, Washington, USC, Arizona State, whoever else you want to throw into that category, give them the weaker team of the other division to start their season off with. Or people saying, I want a strong schedule. Let's start with a bang, get eyeballs on the conference, rope people in on that first weekend of November. How do you want the Pac-12 to handle scheduling?
Well, first of all, let me ask you, because I think you're going to go the opinion of crossover week one, make it sexy. I think you can make it sexy within your own division, too. I think there are ways to do that
for
when
sure.
You start over. If you're just asking about strictly the crossover, you know, if you wanted to cross over week one and say Oregon plays Utah, I'm in. I think it would be great to get a Pac-12 title game rematch the very first game of the season. But I think the argument for guys like Crystal Ball or Whittingham or Lake or Herm or whoever is going to be, do you want to start with big boys in week one? Where week one is probably going to be your worst football, given the uncertainty and the inconsistent schedules that these teams are operating on with practices. But if you want to go because you think it's more appealing that way with your crossover game in week one, I'm all in. And whether that's the Trojans in Oregon, the Trojans in UW, Oregon and Utah, ASU and who, you know, whatever your order of operation is, I do think a crossover would be appealing. I also think you could do a rivalry game to a certain extent in week one. But again, how much of that hinges to you on the coaches just simply saying, we can't have some of the tougher matchups be our opening game?
Well, see, you can only do that for so many teams, though, because somebody's going to have to play a tough game early on.
Right, because you're going to say, well, Oregon can't play UW week one, so Oregon gets Washington State.
Right, you just punish somebody. You punish Colorado, say, sorry, you got to go play a tough team week one because you're supposed to suck this year.
But I think the danger in doing that, Dirt, is assuming what teams are going to be good and what teams are going to be the bottom of your conference. I think it's uncertainty. Yes, we have no clue. We think we know. I just saw a quote from Sumlin, Dirt, that said they've been practicing for 3 or 4 weeks. Arizona's been a lot more loose with the COVID rules. They only took this past week off. He says his team is ready to go. They're going to get back in the weight room, continue practicing.
Still not buying Arizona.
Well, but I'm not buying them either, but they clearly have an advantage over the Oregon schools, right? Over some of the Washington schools here.
LA schools.
LA schools. So this might not boil down to just sheer talent. It might just say who is more prepared and who got more time to get ready for this. If you're asking when the crossover game should happen, I'd like to push it. I don't know. I don't need week one for the crossover game to happen. If you could push it later into the season, I think I'd like that.
Right. I think even for me, part of it is trying to have an interesting start to the year just to get eyeballs on the conference, because everybody else would have already been playing by the time that you start. I also think, like, we have this college football playoff conversation, and it ends up ending in the same spot it feels like every year, that you don't end up making it. But I do wonder, in a year like this where there are no non-conference games, would you rather have, we'll just use USC as an example. They're the favorite in the South, I'm assuming, them and ASU, maybe Utah, but Utah's replacing a lot of guys. We'll just use USC as an example. Would it be better for them at the end of the year to have a win over Washington State or to have a win over Oregon?
I think if you have a crossover, just for the argument's sake, because you brought it up, Oregon, USC. That's on the schedule too, right? Anyway,
it was originally on the schedule, but again, they also had Arizona State on their schedule. You're only going to play one of them.
Let's just say that is going to be penciled in. I think it's better for your conference and for the conference's potential for a playoff if you put that date later into the season, because you allow more eyeballs, attrition has taken place, and now for the committee to look at what's going on in the Pac-12, they say, oh, wow, Oregon and USC are both sitting atop their divisions. They're squaring off 2 weeks, a week before this Pac-12 title game. I think it helps your conference in that way. Whereas it's almost a non-conference tilt in the manner of they play week one. It's very quick, even though it's only a 7-game schedule. I think it's very easy to go 6 games later and go, oh yeah, that's right, week one. I think it's better to go into the playoff with your bigger games, because it allows the committee to get more exposure and you see where the true top teams within your conference are really at.
Yeah, where are you at on this? 503-250-1080. That's a fan text sign. We got some takes rolling in. I'll read some of those on the other side, as we'll find out the schedule next week. We won't know this weekend, but Larry Scott saying last night, I believe, that they're going to release it coming up next week. We'll get to some of that. Also, the dumbest take in sports has officially returned. And what's going on with some of these NFL lines this weekend? Crunch time coming up next on The Fan.
No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments.
Hey, Crunch Time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness, Beaverton, Lower Division, Vancouver. They're all up and running. Go check them out, crunch.com. Stop by one of the locations today. I was not at the Glorious House of Games this morning. I needed a day off. Needed a day off.
Man. Slacker.
Too bad.
My whole body's sore. I'm getting the sad horn now.
It's just pathetic.
The sad horn.
I mean, at this point, I don't know what your excuse is. You're just being a lazy ass.
I couldn't move this morning. That was my excuse. But it's getting better as the day goes on. We got a lot to get to in the final hour, including springing the line. Keep your fake sponsors rolling in. Wrapping up this conversation about the Pac-12 and how they should schedule. Wanted to read a couple of these. Somebody said, I want the Ducks to play USC. That's the most scheduled bang for the buck as far as the college football playoff eyeballs. All in from the start. Another one, play North and South first and put North number one versus South number two, South number one versus North number two.
Mm.
And then the championship game.
Based on last year's
standings, right, yeah. I guess, but there's no guarantees that those teams are that good this year. But
that would be Oregon SC, by the way.
Yes, it would if that's the way you did it. P1 Dustin chimed in and said, Pac-12 has a 0% chance for the playoffs, so come up guns a-blazing. Oregon, USC, Washington, Utah, giddy up, buttercup.
Yeah.
And then the differing take, Pac-12 should not make USC or ASU play Oregon in the crossover game. I want two undefeated teams in the Pac-12 championship
well
game.
And that's the other approach, right? Is do you look at this and you say, what's gonna get us the most eyeballs and what's gonna make our conference be the sexy, you know, schedule of the weekend? Or do you look at it and take an approach of what can we do to get the teams we think
right
are supposed to be in the playoff hunt within our conference, and what can we do to try to set something up to get them to be undefeated as long as they can? You're only going to go so long with that, by the way, because I think you got UW, you've got Utah, you've got other contending teams within their own divisions that I think people are going to overlook anyway.
Sure.
Cal is one of these.
Cal, for sure.
Cal's played Oregon very tough. They've got Garbers coming back yet again. He's healthy.
Yeah, they're a sleeper this year.
So, you know, I think within each division, you can't just overlook every single team and assume it's only two teams within the conference. And I'm going to go back to my last point. I understand how appealing and kind of sexy it would be to open with a USC Oregon. Again, I just think you help yourself when you get to the playoff type conversations. I think you actually help your conference by pushing that game to the end, because if USC wins or Oregon wins, I don't think coaches are going to outwardly just say it, but I think in a roundabout way, we're going to kind of get a feel that those coaches were not happy about that game being number one. That first game is going to be kind of unpredictable in a certain extent because of the way camp is now being set up and what this season has turned into.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Somebody said, what if the Pac-12 just did their own playoff, take the top two in the North, top two in the South, do a playoff with those four?
They are. It's called the Pac-12 title game.
Conference of champions, and have Bill Walton call the game. I'm all for it, baby. Let's do that. We'll keep an eye on what the schedule is going to look like next week. I know that's going to spark a lot of debate about who should play who, when should they play, all that kind of stuff. What should the Pac-12 do? But we'll await what the official schedule looks like next week.
Do you think they should start with the crossover?
To me, it doesn't matter where you start. I do think that you should schedule good versus good. I think a Pac-12 team, look, they're not going to likely get in the playoff this year. I don't know who the most likely team is. Oregon probably would have been it 2 months ago, but now they're replacing even more than what they were already replacing, and we're awaiting word on if the DBs will come back. But Penei Sewell is not going to play this year. We know that. I want to see good versus good, because whether you go 5-2, 4-3, 6-1, you have to go undefeated this year to make the playoff. And if you pad your schedule by going, you know, let's just say Oregon gets scheduled against Colorado this year, but they end up going 7-0. I guarantee you people are going to use that as an excuse.
Well, they're going to always use an excuse against the Pac-12.
That's what I'm saying. But if you pair in a win with Arizona State, who I think could be really good this year, with Jane Daniels, USC's got a lot of talent. Utah's a well-respected program. Like if you pair an undefeated run against the North or South, whoever you're talking about here, with a win against a team that is more respected from the other division, I think that helps your case. So that's the way I would do it.
You know, the undefeated thing is another, it's almost an element of this conversation is, does the Pac-12 have to go undefeated to get to the playoff?
And to me, the answer is yes.
Well, and I can understand the thinking there, but last year, Oregon is a play away from losing one game the whole year. And I'll say this, I think they're in. The way they beat Utah in the Pac-12 title game, if they would have not had the hiccup against ASU on that double move,
they would have had a top Oklahoma.
And I think they would have. The rankings to that point were kind of swinging that way anyway. And if they go through the regular season, one loss, beat the crap out of Utah the way they did in the title game, I think the committee's giving Oregon the nod with one loss. And I know, You look at the schedule of the other conferences. Clemson's probably in. Bama probably in. And then Ohio State within the Big Ten. A lot of us are assuming they'll be undefeated too. So sure, that last spot's up for grabs. I'm not ready to say you have to be undefeated. There might be a possibility you could suffer one loss in a weird year like this. And if Oregon or USC or Washington or ASU, whoever the hell it is, if they look good, minus one hiccup, and in the Pac-12 title game, it's going to come down to the final moments anyway. It's going to be between them and insert other teams in other conferences.
Yeah, the tough part this year, though, especially, is the fact that you might have conferences that end up playing three more games than you. So if you have a team that's 9-1 versus a team that's 7-0, who are they going to give the nod to?
Well, it's kind of a bit unfair to go that way, right?
It is. I get it. I know. And that's why the playoffs should be expanded. We can get back to that conversation. But I think that just highlights, again, the difficult nature. When you're playing fewer games, I think there's more pressure on you to win out, where maybe that doesn't exist for other conferences.
I just, you know, it's another day, another, oh my God, the Pac-12 sucks thing. Like, for the Pac-12 fan, and I totally get it. We can differ to a certain extent on what the rollout should be during COVID. The conference did do it right. You can agree to disagree, and we all know the numbers for younger players. They got the adequate testing. They came back and they're playing. They did it right. They delayed, yeah, and they're coming back. So that's a moot point. What I'm now mad at is as soon as they announce they're coming back, it goes from, oh, look at the Pac-12. What a bunch of pansies, they won't play, to, hey, we're coming back, we're going to play. Well, it doesn't matter. Even if you're undefeated, you're not making the playoff. It's like as soon as the Pac-12 does one thing, everybody reacts and calls them out.
Isn't that the Rock's line? Doesn't matter what you're...
As soon as they said they're coming back, Larry Scott jumped on a conference call on Zoom. Stuart Mandel says, you go undefeated, it's not going to matter. People are already looking at the playoff. Well, you played seven games, it's not going to matter, you're relevant. It's like they're already being called out and canceled out of the playoff conversation. And guys, I get it. They're not the best conference of college football. I'm not telling you that. They might not have a playoff team this year, but they haven't played one snap. And you have three national prominent college voices that have already basically said no chance in hell.
That's the reality we live in, Bob. It's the reality we live in.
Just never please people.
Until we shut everybody up, which hopefully happens sooner rather than later. Let me ask you this before we go. Is the quarterback wearing a backwards hat take the dumbest of all time or one of the dumbest of all time?
I'm really hoping we have to get to this today.
You're the one that put a poll question up.
Well,
on
I did it for a poll, not a topic. I've made this abundantly clear.
Do you like your quarterbacks with their hats on straight or backwards?
I don't think it matters because you can Google image almost every single great quarterback in the NFL the last 30 years. And at a press conference of some sort, their hat is backwards. So
fitting. What kind of hat are you wearing right now?
Backwards hat.
Wow. Well, yeah. Bias. Get your bias out of here.
Well,
you backwards hat wearing host.
Not all of us could be the franchise host like you and wear it forward.
I can't take you. You're not a franchise host, man. You can't lead this show anymore. You got a backwards hat on. I can't trust you to lead a segment. Come on, man.
Is he ever going to get off that as a topic?
I at least hadn't heard it for a couple of years.
Nobody
and the fact
cares.
That it's now back is like, really, that's the angle we're going. Carson Wentz sucks right now because his receivers are hurt. His offensive line is terrible. Like, they got a lot of issues. And he's dealing with confidence problems because his backup won a Super Bowl over him and has a statue on the outside of the stadium. That's why Carson Wentz is struggling, not because he's wearing a backwards hat at a press conference.
It's because he wore a backwards hat. And if he comes out this weekend and looks bad, we know it's going to be because of the way he wore it.
Buck just walked in. He's got a hat on forwards. I can trust Buck. Buck can lead this show. He can produce this show because he's got a hat on forward. He's taking it seriously.
Yeah, I don't know about all that.
Okay? Forward hat means you're focused.
Buck also hosted this morning, left, came back for some reason, left again, and now he's back again.
Yeah, we're on producer number three. Can Joe come in for like 10 minutes in the final hour? Get
we
producer
already tried
number
that.
Four? We already tried what?
To get Joe in here today. Just to complete the whole producer trifecta.
Yeah. That would have been
or
nice.
Or quadfecta?
That would have been cool. That's like playing nine positions in a baseball game.
Okay, let me ask you this.
It would have been kind of like that.
Very quick. I know we're against it. Some people do believe Colin, right? They subscribe to the take that the leader cannot wear a hat backwards. I still think that's an asinine argument. Again, go Google any good quarterback. Brady, Wilson, they've all had press conferences. I think Brady and Rodgers have both been at Super Bowl press conferences with backwards hats.
Yeah.
They both have rings. You can feel that way. What would the take be for him if all 32 quarterbacks just sent texts and said, hey, Monday during your Zoom presser, wear it backwards?
What's the hot take?
that would be so funny.
What's the take? Well, none of them are going to win. None of them are leaders. That's why it's a ridiculous argument. And if I was Aaron Rodgers, I actually would be texting, especially because he's hated on Rodgers for the last 3 years, and now Rodgers is balling out.
Right, he's having a great start.
I really would contemplate it. Hey, guys, yeah, I know some of you didn't win. Some of us did win. Let's put that aside. Let's all wear our hat backwards tomorrow in our press conference.
Oh, so yeah, answer the question. One of the dumbest of all time or the dumbest of all time? You can't wear a backwards hat if you're a star quarterback. Ken Griffey Jr., man, that guy had some serious character issues. I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
That backwards hat he wore.
Not a franchise guy.
Show some respect.
Did he lead him to a championship?
God. You know what? One texter said this morning that one person ever can wear a backwards hat and it's Ken Griffey Jr., just like one person ever can wear a cutoff sleeve hoodie and it's Bill Belichick. The only two people can do it in their respective sports, and that's it. That's it. And it's over.
That's pretty funny. Crunch Time brought to you by Crunch Fitness. Beaverton, Alloa Division, Vancouver. They're all back up and running. Go check them out. Crunch.com or stop by one of the locations.
You know
today.
Why? The kid got hurt in Cincy, right?
Backwards hat.
Backwards hat.
That's not even funny to joke about. I feel bad that's the way his career went. I do get the point. Like there's some people just look better doing certain things, and nobody will ever look better with a backwards hat than Ken Griffey Jr. Nobody can rock that look better than Griffey.
I'm not saying
he's the only one. I'm just saying, like, if you try a backwards hat on anybody else, it's never going to match the look.
The
Griffey
argument
had.
Makes no sense because the best in the business could wear it tomorrow, and what would he say? Yeah, right. If Belichick wore a backwards hat Sunday and beat the Raiders, what's the conversation? The hat does not dictate whether you're good or not.
But I think the point is the choice of how to wear the hat may be an indication of your overall...
Now we're actually having this conversation. Why are we actually doing this? Come on.
You brought the topic up.
I know. We're supposed to make fun of it and then move on.
I am making fun of it. Brady and Rodgers had press conferences at Super Bowls with them. Nobody cared.
They said Dirt's cap-canceling spray. I am. Turn your hat around for the final hour. Come on, man. Show some respect. Okay, last to get to what the
you're
line...
You're so white.
We got to get to what the... What's up with some of the lines in the NFL. I want to start there. LeBron James is a little bee and he needs to stop complaining because it worked for him last night and it was driving me nuts watching that game, even though I did take the Lakers in my parlay. And we'll Sprague the line at 2:30. So get your fake sponsors in 503-250-1080. Load a final hour. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.